we love hip hop.
I always make sure to, I always have a crisp audio for the people that are listening on Spotify and all the different listening platforms. You know what I mean? But we have this.
Well, for those listening, I'm on a very, I live in a very busy part of New York City. So you might catch a siren or a, you know, a bus screaming by. So sorry for that. Can't help that.
You might hear, what's your problem?
Literally, yeah. You'll hear someone get shot. Right?
Well, we're in Toronto, so you might hear the same thing. I don't know what you've heard about us, but
I love Toronto. I had a great time there.
Yeah. Well, let's introduce this gentleman right here. I got the pleasure of starting to get to know this gentleman from listening to one of my favorite podcasts, the New Rory and Mall podcast that I listen to every Tuesday and every Friday, like clockwork. Yeah. Right. And through the listening and just hearing him chime in on different things and hearing just different parts of the story here and there, I said, you know what? I need to start putting the whole, the all the pieces together of this whole podcast nation that we've got going on over here from the whole of North America. Right. And also, besides that, just being on a podcast, like this gentleman has worked for record companies, you know, has done a lot of great social media moves and strategizing for people behind the scenes. So with no further ado, we have Julian Nicholas in the building.
How we doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. And you know, like, once again, thanks for coming through and doing this with me.
It's a very nice intro. It was very complimentary. This, I feel like this is fun. I don't usually get compliments. I usually just get hate. So
listen, bro. It, like you said, you're starting to do interviews, right? I seen your recent interview with Danny from The Stop.
He's great. Yeah. That was fun.
What made you decide to do that interview in the first place? Because he's a commentary YouTube channel that comments on the tea or the science. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. The science. I like how he's really coined that. Danny, Danny's interesting. So I was with Rory at a show the night before and he said, yo, tomorrow I'm going to do Danny. Do you want to come? And I had plans that day. I was like, otherwise I would have pulled up. Mm-hmm. So afterwards I was on a talk space or Twitter space, something like that. And Danny was there and I think it was on our Discord. I don't know. And he was like, yeah, like, you know, it was a great time with Rory and Rory told me he had a good time. And Danny was like, yo, would you be interested? And I was like, yeah, let's set it up. Like, so literally that night we set it up. The 2 days later, I sat down with him. I think he does great work. I said to him, and I know how Danny works. You know, he puts out everything in clips.
Yes.
So, you know, it's a good strategy, but he just released Rory's full. I'm assuming mine's coming next. I'm not, you know, in charge of how that gets rolled out. But I told him, I was like, you know, anyone can do what you're doing in terms of, you know, reacting to the podcast sphere and shows. I said, people, at least when they see me or like Damaris, there's that barrier of entry. Cause you have to know the guys to then even be in a position to then get on the podcast. Whereas you, it's like he said, I started because I was getting a lot of love and Reddit comments and it made sense that people were valuing my opinion. So then I started this channel. I was like, that's commendable because anybody can do retroactively what he's doing, but he's taking the chance and the time and the risk to be public facing now. So I'm glad I was, you know, one of his first, you know, in-person interviews. I'm happy to support him.
And for you yourself, and also big salute to Danny from The Stop, right? But for you yourself, is that one of your first interviews? Because while I'm doing my research, I'm not finding a bunch of Julian interviews floating all over the YouTube space.
Yeah, it's funny. I used to be an interviewer. Honestly, when I moved to New York, I was working at Hot 97.
Okay.
Doing some on-camera interviews with artists and a lot of like, I came in the game as a writer, so I had a pretty strong pen. And that was my kind of break into the space. So this is like 2018. So I had a few on-camera interviews out there in the ether. They're a little more, not a little more, they're like serious and more like journalistic. Like it's not so much of my personality and like the person I am on the pod that you see. It's more like, you know, did my research, studied the album, kind of, which I love. There's room for that.
Yeah.
But no, to your point, since I've been podcasting there, I don't think there have been interviews about like me as the subject or whatever. So
yeah, the camera hasn't been turned around in your direction at this point.
not as much. I've avoided it for years, but I can't now. So,
so for the people in our audience here, because we're a very Toronto centric podcast. I interview a lot of artists for the most part, but for you as a producer of the New Rory and Mall podcast, can you break down all of the things that you do just period, like for that? And, you know, maybe some of your other jobs that you're doing currently before we do a dive back.
Oh yeah. Yeah. For the show, obviously if you're a viewer or a listener, you see that I'm on it, as a personality. I'm also, producer. So the run of show, coming up with the topics, sequencing the topics, helping make transitions during the show, those kind of things.
Okay.
Providing clarity if necessary. Other times we just, on the fly, we always get those comments. They don't know shit. Well, sometimes we don't. Then there's naming the episodes, coming up with the artwork creative, which I then text to the guy that actually physically makes the thumbnails and artwork, Peach. Shout out to him.
Salute to Peach.
He's the best. Yeah. Writing the descriptions, all the descriptions on the DSPs and YouTube I write. I run all the social media accounts. Peach cuts those clips. I give him creative direction on like, hey, this is the timestamp, and then he makes the clip. Then I upload and caption those. So that's across all socials, including YouTube community.
Wow.
Other than chime in, jump in on Discord. There's some more stuff on the back end. Communicate with like our, partner, our new content partner. Well, not content partner, our new production house partner.
Yep.
Damaris and I do those calls together. Go on tour manage, perform. It's everything. I mean, we're small. So some people wear a lot of hats, and I think I wear damn near every hat. In the studio space, I've kind of taken on the role as a studio manager too. It's just, there's a lot going on.
Are you doing set design as well?
The set was a set that the guys had, in the Sirius building, which wasn't Sirius's, that was theirs. They just, you've retrofitted it for that space.
Yeah.
So when we got the new studio, which isn't through like a Sirius or the new partner, we fitted it to the space that we currently have. So that's always a constant. Like that doesn't change. The set doesn't change. Kind of switched up for Patreon. We got these new bean bags, or if we're shooting a My Karma is Beautiful, which we also shoot in the studio, we'll use like a different side of the studio, with like the brick wall and the lights and plants, which will kind of move around. But mostly the shooting is done in the studio space.
And for the people who don't know My Karma is Beautiful, that's like y'all's musical segment that you do where you showcase an up and coming band or an up and coming artist that's doing their thing.
Yeah.
Anywhere, basically.
It definitely started as an up and coming. And then we just did a week in LA where we shot with some pretty known, well-known names. When does this come out?
Probably a couple weeks from now, but I also do clips.
By the time this comes out, we'll just don't clip this then. By the time this comes out, we're putting out tomorrow, Boz, a dear friend of mine. They just put out an incredible album. He's currently on tour. He stopped by when we were in LA. I did two songs off his new album, Yao Ming and Diamonds. And if you're watching this, it's available now. It's a sick shoot. We shot this, at this beautiful home in LA. Go check that out. It's on our socials and on our YouTube. So
dope. And I like that you also mentioned that you did two songs off his album. I'm not going to let that slide, because besides the new Rory and Mall podcast, you do a lot of other things in the industry, right? So can you break down a couple of other things? Like, I know you do some work with Dreamville as well.
I wouldn't look in the professional capacity. I'd say no, but I'm very good friends with a lot of guys on that team. I wouldn't say like, I send them an invoice and there's a payout sort of thing. Boz is truly one of my good friends in this space. And, anytime I can put him, the few times that I have, and again, this is not like I do this all the time, but the few times I can put him in contact with someone or provide an opportunity for him, or if he's looking for something, get it done on his behalf. Like I'm always going to look out for my friends. So, these aren't monetary things, and I don't think I could ever you know, payback boss for what he's done for me. He took me to South Africa for like a month in 2022, which was the most insane trip I've ever done. Met a lot of amazing people on that trip that I'm still friends with. But yeah, I think that is such like a true friendship first. And then, you know, when you're in the same industry, opportunities come up, things happen. And we're working on something right now, maybe where I can join him on tour for a bit to work on something with him. I don't want to spoil that. We're still working on it. But yeah, so we're really making a push to make that, you know, synergy between like a real work opportunity and the friendship thing. But for now, like, you know, every time he comes to New York, that's my guy. We go out together. I'll bum in the studio with him, and he trusts my ear. He's obviously an amazing musician. So there's a lot of synergy there with like his vision and how I can help communicate it or deliver it. It's, you know, it's very, very pure relationship.
And do you also make music? I didn't get a chance to actually find that out. Like, do you work on music in any capacity?
No, unfortunately, no instrumental capabilities. When I was a kid, I played drums for a little bit and saxophone, but that's nothing to write home about. I think like Rory, and I think this is something when we started making the turn from like work relationship to friend, we kind of realized how we have similar ears, I think. Mm-hmm. And I know the sounds of music, and I know what sounds good, or hearing a loop or hearing a beat and knowing who should go on this or what should be placed somewhere. Like the technical side of things, I think my mind works, because I'm the same way with even in the podcasting space. Like I just, there's certain things that I know work. And it's sometimes you can't explain them. You just have to, sometimes you just need to be in the room with the person that can physically do it. Yeah. Like in my case on the pod, if I'm with Peej and I'm like, okay, take this timestamp, move it here, do this here. That, and then it's like, he sees it too, but it's just like, I'm just the communicator or vehicle to get it to that point. So I think with music, that's become my thing as well. Like I've heard, you know, Rory's been making his album before it came out, is, mm-hmm. you know, it was a long, lengthy process, and he would often bounce roughs or samples or sounds or melodies to me. And I just, you know, just open conversation. What do you think of this? Give me some advice about this. Or how do you think this sounds? So just being someone that people that are making music trust, like an ear that people trust, to me, that's, at least for now, that's fulfilling enough that I'm respected as an ear in the space.
That's dope. Have you heard, like been able to identify a hit and then it actually becomes a hit?
I mean, yeah, well, yeah, I've had some fortune of hearing some records before they popped. Like Armani White's one of my closest friends, and that Billie Eilish record, we knew pretty damn early that was going to be one of those. And then when I was at Atlantic Records, it was an old YBN Namir record, Opstoppa, which is this plaque right here. That's one that I didn't like. That wasn't one that I found. Like the song existed, but it was never officially out. And then we found pretty early a sound on TikTok of it that had like 10,000 creates. But again, it was like an original audio. It wasn't like a big thing. And then at the label, as a digital marketer, so we brought that sound in network. I did a whole TikTok campaign, kind of, you know, if when there's a small fire, just add gas kind of thing. Yeah. And it took that record from like 10,000 creates to over a few million creates in the span of a month, if that. And, you know, the song went gold. We did the remix with 21 Savage, like, you know, and it was just one of those big, it was like a second breath of like resurrection of his career, it was a really fun moment to just be kind of on the ground and like utilize TikTok at that time, which was relatively new-ish, and really like digging in there and making that work. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Like, you mentioned, you have so many different hats that you've worn and wear right now in the industry. But let's go back a little bit, right?
We love Hip Hop. Sponsors
Diamond Club with delivery all over the GTA and now all across Canada. They got the best selection of flower, edibles, and pens and all types of goodies that you need. You can find them on their Instagram page, DiamondClub_Canada, or you can find them on the 7 Days of Weed app as well as the Leafy Things app. Let them know that you heard about them through the We Love Hip Hop Network and they may give you a discount. Big salute to Diamond Club. Cheer!
Yeah.
You're from Albany, New York. Were you born there?
Yeah, I was born in Albany. I tell people I'm just from Albany because it's just easier to say, but I grew up about 20 minutes outside of Albany in this place called Schenectady.
Mm-hmm.
Small city. Again, yeah, a few minutes from Albany. So yeah, just, you know, pretty as like, you know, city as it gets, extremely diverse. My high school, there were over 44 languages spoken.
Wow.
It was just a big, over 3,000 students. You know, I saw a lot from like, you know, all over different cultures, different, you know, trajectories in life. It was a very raw, exposure into like the real America, which I think I, in retrospect, loved. At the time, it was, you know, kind of difficult. There was like so much going on, but I'm happy that we stayed and we opted for the public school versus going, you know, the private route.
Yeah. Yeah. And as far as like nationality, right? I'm over here in Toronto. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to break it down to you. Like if we see you walking down the street, we're automatically going to think that you're an Indian guy, like, or Punjabi or something like that, but you're actually black and white.
I mean, no, but
break that down to us. Like, what are you, bro?
That's a great question. I always forget that. My mom's Lebanese.
Okay.
So my mom is extremely fair Lebanese woman too. She's a very pale skin, even compared to her siblings. So my mom's 100% Lebanese. My dad is he's the mix here. My dad's, if you look at him, you see like that's a black man.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's like a Nigerian, Cape Verdean, and like Portuguese.
Wow.
But he's just a big black guy in America. It's a very unique, odd mix. And what makes it, I think, a little more difficult is if you look at my brother and I have three brothers, two mm-hmm. of which are half brothers. But my full brother, Kendall, and I, we look alike, but not like you could tell there's a difference. Like Kendall's a little lighter than I am. We have very different hair textures. But if you look at us, you're like, they're related, but there's still like some physical differences. So yeah, we're just the, definitely like a representation of a melting pot type family.
So what do you get when you, like when somebody just walks up to you on the road or, you know, they want to check you on in a box at the DMV, like what do you get usually?
It's funny you said that about Toronto because I found out based on where I am in the world is what people guess.
Yes.
It's like, okay, what's the common factor? Like, what do we see that looks like him here?
Yeah.
So in New York, I'll get, you know, Dominican or Puerto Rican or sometimes Indian. But yeah, like you said, in Toronto, it's like the normally they would lean on the Indian side of things, Punjabi. But it's funny. I anytime I run into a Lebanese person or like a Syrian or that, you know, Middle Eastern, they often see it. And I don't know what it is. I can never figure out like what the tell is, but I'll ask, you know, you talk to a girl and they're always like, you'll never guess what I am. And I'm like, tell me your last name. And they'll say it. And I'm like, oh, that's your, you know, you're German or whatever.
It's fucking
last name's like Reichenstein. Like I can, obviously you're so, but with me, I'm like, I'll ask the same thing. And they're like, well, what's your last name? And I was like, Delgado. That doesn't help at all.
Yeah.
Like Delgado doesn't, if you hear Delgado, you're like, oh, he's Spanish.
Yeah, automatically.
So, yeah, which is just not so, because Delgado, my dad's father, my grandfather, he was the Portuguese one.
Portuguese, so yes.
From the Portuguese side, but no one thinks Portuguese when they hear that.
It's an Easter egg, bro.
it's just a complete mind fuck. So, very few people guess the Lebanese, if at all. Yeah.
That's cool, man. You can basically switch anytime you want.
Yeah, seriously. I wish there was a benefit to it, though. Honestly, I mean, in this country, it's like, oh, you're being black's not the best. And then obviously post 9/11 America, being Middle Eastern is not great either. So it's like the mix of the two worst things you could be in this country.
You just backed into a corner.
Yeah.
So like, you're over there in Albany, living Albany life, or, you know, living up, let's say upstate life, right?
Yep.
What made you decide to move to the Big Apple?
Oh man. Well, shit. Well, so yeah, if we're following that through that thread, I went from Albany to a small liberal arts college in Pennsylvania.
Okay.
I guess university. And then from there I moved to Chicago.
And before we move on to Chicago, what were you studying?
I was English and film theory. So I read, watched movies and wrote about both, like critically.
Dope.
Took a lot of photography classes, and just try to, you know, my school is a very engineer heavy school, and I took every art class that I could because I was not an engineer.
You're creative.
Yeah, it's my comfort space just to kind of create and try new shit. So yeah, I got into this program here called Teach for America.
Okay.
Which placed me in Chicago. I taught on the South Side for 2 years.
Wow.
63rd in Michigan, got my master's degree in education as a part of the program. A grueling experience, hell of a time. There's many stories that come with that, but are not worth getting into. But it was pretty much after that experience where I had that split moment of like, okay, what am I doing?
Mm-hmm.
Is this bought me a great experience. This bought me a master's degree, which, you know, they covered, but now it's like, this looks nice on a resume, but what am I going to do with this?
The practical, basically.
Yeah. So then I had a few months left on the lease on my apartment there. And I spent that summer, nothing like a Chicago summer. I spent that summer going to a lot of music festivals, shows, and then just writing. Like this whole angle I took was writing about, what are the current trends in music and how are the music trends kind of following the political social climate?
Mm-hmm.
That I still, to this day, that's still the case. They're always mirroring each other. So it's just, you know, how do you put that into words and articulate it based on, you know, using this artist and the song as an example. So this song and this artist is like what Trump said in this speech. So it's like kind of like that, you're blending two worlds.
Yeah.
And I wrote like four or five of those at like a coffee shop near my apartment and uploaded them to my LinkedIn account. And then had a family friend that was at Hot 97 that I didn't know, but he knew one of my older brothers, my older half brother.
Mm-hmm.
And he put us in contact. I sent him those articles. And this guy was like a video producer. Like he wasn't, you know, they don't have a writing department. They don't do any of that stuff. So he showed it to the head of the digital department and was like, these are great. Like this is, the writing's amazing. You know, do you live in New York? And I was like, no, but I'm coming home for whatever holiday or something. So I came home, came to Hot 97, met them in person. He was like, okay, like, you know, wow, these are awesome. Like, when do you want to start? Like, let's carve out what this looks like. So they pretty much, I was hired part-time. It was never a full-time position because again, like they don't have, I didn't write stuff or pitch to anybody. It was just me and the back end of their website. And I could just write and upload anything I wanted. So, that's kind of what I did. I packed my shit, drove from Chicago to New York and moved, lived on my friend's couch for like 6 months.
Wow.
Yeah. And then that was my job. I wasn't making shit, but at least put my foot in the door and there was a legitimacy in the space because I had the name of Hot 97 behind me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pretty soon after that, I had like the logins to, you know, the Instagram and the Twitter. And then that was, you know, a nice thing to have my name behind as well. And then that went from me writing about artists to doing in-person interviews with artists. They're in the studio all the time. And then I'd get, you know, form relationships with these people. And then sometimes I'd do on-camera interviews with these people. So it just kind of like grew into something that I didn't foresee coming. And it never like masticized into like a physical full-time job. I was just kind of throwing shit at the wall and seeing what I like to do. And yeah. thank them for letting me experiment. But then that was like about a year, year and a half or so. And then I got DM'd on LinkedIn from the guys that owned, you know, the Daquan Instagram account.
I'm not sure. It's there's so much content that goes to my brain.
Yeah.
You got to refresh my memory a little bit. The Daquan Instagram. What was he popular for posting?
It's a meme account.
Okay, I'm not up on it.
You've probably seen this photo, right?
Yes.
So it's this account. It's a, you know, tens of millions of followers, a huge account. The guys that own it reached out to me, and they're foreign, broken English. I thought it was like a scam, but they were legit. They were like, "Hey, we're expanding. We need like, you know, someone to." They were launching a Snapchat channel, and okay. they wanted some. To write original content and produce the content and kind of like be the creative and overseer. So I got hired to do that. And that like legitimized me as like the meme social media guy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, they were new. They didn't, you know the space well. They were foreigners in the space. So I was able to ask them to like, "Hey, let me go to this show here, like send me to here and I'll cover it live on the Snap thing." And there was like a few moments where I did that. Pretty quickly, I mean, we blew up pretty fast. In like 3 months, I think I got over 2 million subs on that Snap account.
Damn.
Yeah, it was one of those, like it just took off, which allowed them to open up like 8 other vertical channels on Snap. It was pretty cool. We butted heads a bit, and it didn't end the sweetest, but, you know, amicably kind of split. What happened? I met Rory at a festival in Philadelphia, Made in America.
So it wasn't one of the Henny Paloozas.
No, I didn't know what that was.
Okay.
I learned about them because again, I missed all those days. I was in Chicago during that.
Mm-hmm.
So when I got here, that had already ended and it had just become Duce Palooza.
Right.
So I'm with Armani White. We're at Made in America 2019, I want to say. Yeah. And Armani's on build super early. So, you know, he's from Philly. There's shows in Philly. We're like, "Yo, if you guys are cool with it, talking to the festival people, let's give us a sound check. We'd love to just like fuck around and practice and just like enjoy this moment." Right. It was our first festival. And they were like, "Sure, whatever." So we came in and this is like, you know, before the doors open for the festival. Armani's up there with the band where everyone's kind of doing their thing. And then in walks the Duce Palooza guys. So we're like, "Well, who are these guys?" Like, well, they're actually before us. So we were like, "Okay, let's let them practice." We thought they were like a group, like, "Let's let them practice and then we'll go." So they're just the DJs, like Austin Mills, like those guys are like doing their thing, testing the knobs and shit, doing their levels. And then like Lowe and Chris are doing like mic checks. And we're like, "Oh, they're like a DJ. This is like a group party thing." Yeah. This is like a party. It's not so much a, you know, like a artist. But then the festival doors open, no one else was on, just Duce Palooza. So everyone that was coming in was staying at this stage and they did such a good job. And at this point I had been talking to Rory and the whole team. Cause you know, in the off hours before the gates open, we were just small talking, getting mm-hmm. to know each other. And they did such a good job of getting the crowd hype that they held the crowd. So when Armani came on, we had a huge crowd.
Nice.
We're like, "Oh, this is fuck hell yeah." So they were like, "Yo, you guys stuck around and supported us. We'll do the same for you." So they just kicked it with us and hung out. And then, you know, it's a major festival, but it's a small, the grounds are small. And you know, there's always this one artist village. So we would, throughout that weekend, continuously run into each other, get drinks, small talk, this and that.
Mm-hmm.
And then swapped information with some of those guys. And then about a month or two later, they tapped my line and were like, "Hey, we're about to go on this tour. You mentioned you do social media work. Do you want to come on the road with us and like capture this shit live? And like, we'd love to pick your ear on like certain things that we can do to enhance the tour this right. year."
And like, this is for fine. New Rory and Mall tour, or was it a Joe Button podcast tour?
This is for Duce Palooza.
Oh, Duce Palooza.
Yeah.
Okay. Keep going.
Yeah. So I did that whole 2019 tour run with them.
Nice.
Which led to that big show, the Barclays Center, right before the shutdown. that happened, went home for the holiday. And then few turn of the new year, the lockdown happens, and then there goes Palooza.
Wow. And
so, yeah.
During this time when you first met Rory, this is like 2019, you're saying, right?
And 2018, 2019, yeah.
Right? I'm trying to put my timelines together. I'm not as good as Danny, okay? I don't do the science as deep. I listen to both podcasts equally, you know what I'm saying? But I don't remember the timelines of when they ended their stint as host on the Joe Button podcast. Was it during that time when you guys started hanging out that they were still doing Joe's podcast?
Big Sleuth is Steven Hot Grabba with a variety of different grabba flavors and dispensers. They got red rose grabba, that red herring grabba, and peanut butter. Hit them up on their Instagram page, Steamin' Hot Grabba, and use the code WeLoveHipHop and receive a discount on your order. Again, you can find them on Instagram, Steamin' Hot Grabba. Now let's get back to the show. Cheer.
Yeah, I mean, well, I wouldn't even say like hanging out, like we weren't,
or
like,
just when you guys met and you were doing the work.
Yeah, like yeah, they were very much at the peak of the reign of that podcast. Like, and at that time, I wasn't into podcasting. Like as a listener, I was still like very much stubborn on like, why would I listen to random people speak when I can just listen to music? And then a girl that I was seeing at the time loved their podcast. So when we would, you know, do cooking nights or whatever, she'd just have it on. And then we started, you know, from there listening together. And then I was like, I heard one. I was like, oh, I know that guy. She was like, which one? I was like, the Rory guy. I was like, I know him. which was really funny. So then.
And also score.
yeah, right. So then it became a thing of like when they would do live shows, you know, Rory was kind enough to like let me go, and I'd bring her, and it was like kind of like a date night thing. I went to most of their New York shows. You know, met the other guys. I briefly met Maul there. He didn't say much. The same with Joe. Briefly met him. You know, all the backstage green room antics, all that shit. And then Rory and I, it just in passing, we see each other at shows, events, whatever. It was never like, what are you doing? Let's get a drink kind of thing. We weren't on like that level yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if I were to text him, it would have to be like purposeful. It wasn't just like, you know, just to throw some shit or like hang out. So come their falling out. And this is shit. I'm trying to think of the timeline here. 2021.
Yeah. Something like that. Right? 'Cause the pandemic was over. Everybody was back together. Like outside type of thing.
Yeah. And at this point, I'm listening to the pod. Like, I know Rory more because, you know, a year or so has passed, a year and a half, and I'm listening to the pod like as a fan now, too. Mm. And I hear what's all going down. And at this time, I'm at Atlantic Records. I'm at the label. And the people at the label know that I'm close with Rory. So there was questions coming my way. And I was like, I don't fucking know what's going on.
Wait a minute. At the label, they're asking you about this?
Playing out publicly too. So it's not like I was privy to anything that wasn't being said in person on a microphone on camera. So,
that's some nosy shit.
Well, it's funny. Like Danny, again, shout out to Danny, but like when I sat down with him, was asking me like, you must know the real, I was like, no, the real played out in real time.
We watched it.
You saw what I saw. So I said to Danny, I'll say it here. I was like, I didn't know the severity of it or how legit everything was until Rory called me and was like, hey, we're done. Like officially we're setting up, we're shopping around, Maul and I, we're looking to do a deal and we need to build a team. Would you like to come on board? And at this time he's like, would you want to run our social media?
Mm.
I was like, course, like sure. So I'm still at the label doing my thing, and on this, you know, the side, I'm helping them build their social media, get the accounts, you know, verify, do all that shit, and you know, post, think of funny creative shit. And from my into the Rory Maul pod wasn't it wasn't like fuck these guys, it was like, yo, we're here now, we need to build, we need to action items. Yeah. So that was kind of my pull in. And then, you know, however many months after that, maybe 5-6 months, there was the conversations of like coming in a more producer role. And then And then it was like, we'll do microphone on Patreon, which lasted like a week or two. And then it was like, just be on the show. And I was like, okay. So, and then that's how we got here now. So it's, yeah.
I heard the progression, you know what I mean? Like I heard, you know, from just being Rory and Maul together. And then after a while it was started, I think it started with Damaris chiming in here and there.
Damaris was there from the very beginning.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And then I started hearing you chime in. And then it became more of a four mic podcast than just a two mic podcast. Even though it's still Rory and Maul, like I feel now it's more of a synergy of like all four of you guys giving opinions or just, you know, bringing up topics and stuff like that. It's to me a great pod the way you guys have it now.
I appreciate it. And like, yeah, I mean, that takes a lot of time because it's weird because you can be, you know, close with someone and be friends, but there's still that thing where if once you're rolling and there's a mic that can kind of stagger or loose, like kind of create a hiccup in the conversation. And just the, like anything, the way to get better is just repetition. So we found not only repetition, but we found, you know, topics that work best for us, you know, just certain things that, now we're getting to know, okay, who's most passionate about these things. Let them lead that conversation. If they're like, if this is their topic, let them take it. You know, we make the joke Damaris represents all women, but like, you know, when there's those kind of things that come up, like do it, like this is your,
say it to the woman,
you know, challenge us. Cause again, we're the guy, we're probably going to make the ignorant, like go for the low blow joke, but push back or like, you know, or fight back or even make a joke back. So we, I think we're, it took a while, but I think, yeah, just, it's more of an easy listen and like conversationally, I think we're in like a more comfortable, space, which I'm happy about.
That's dope, man. And even just on a quick personal tip, right? Like I've dealt with, I'm going on 14 years of sobriety now.
Right. Sheesh, congrats.
Yeah. And like, obviously I smoke a lot of piff, but like, as far as from drinking and stuff like that, I've heard it through the podcast, you know, through jokes and stuff like that, you've dealt with your share of addiction issues and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah.
My question to you, though, is now as you're more visible, the success is starting to grow, you're moving around and shaking. Is that becoming a harder thing to deal with or easier?
No, I think the worst thing, and again, never saw professional help, nor like all the advice I'm giving is just coming from me. It's not like I sat down with someone or talked. So this could be completely wrong. But as someone that I think it's really difficult for me, at least, to pretend like something never happened. So I'm not saying like always make the joke or acknowledge it at all times. But I always fear like when people quit drinking or quit drugs and then they're like, the way in which they look at a bad relationship. It's like, that never happened. I'm off it. No, but like it did. And there's a lot that you can learn from the mistakes that you made in that phase. And then the more importantly, why you were doing it and what you thought, what void you thought you were filling. Again, not just a drug thing or an alcohol thing. Why were you hanging out with these people? Why were you in this bad relationship with this person? If you really, you know, if it wasn't for you. And I think to ignore it and put that on the back burner is you're doing yourself a disservice because you're not giving your time, yourself the time to properly reflect on, okay, what was it? Yeah. What was happening in my phase of this life and how can I improve? So I think like now, and I'm about 2 years or so removed from, coke was my drug of choice. But yeah, I think, you know, I told my friends again, because it was a cold turkey thing. I told my friends like, look, like don't change your behavior, please, because that'll make me more, that'll make me upset if you guys feel like you can't be yourself around me. But like, not only that, but like, yes, I want my friends to be themselves. And I also want to be able to be comfortable around it and talk about it. Because if I look, I'm no more special than anybody else. If I can do it, anybody can do it. Like it's not, you know, it's obviously an extremely difficult thing to do, but I think it's rude of me to not like be someone that can, you know, someone could confide in and be open with and honest with. Cause I feel like people often talk about we always see the success, like the after. Very few people are talking about it during. Mm-hmm. And I think I was open with it during. I obviously didn't have the podcast at that time, but I was open with my friends and my family during. And I think people that are in it are afraid to open up because you only hear about the success stories once it's over.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, like anything, the first step is like acknowledging. And if someone feels safe enough, and I've gotten a few people that DM me or, you know, send me a voice note. Mm-hmm. They're like, hey, I never told anyone this, but I'm comfortable telling you this. And I'm like, fuck yeah. Like, cool. Like, this is step one. You're saying it out loud.
Yep.
So go from there and, you know, send me a check-in every once in a while or whatever, however you're feeling. So if I can be that in any capacity to someone, I think that's great. Why did you kick the bottle? What was going on?
I went to jail. I got super drunk one night, fell asleep. And listen, it's great that you mentioned all these different things about your sobriety, because as podcasters, like, I get to tell some of my craziest drunken stories, and I have a great ass time telling my drunken stories, and I got a lot of them. You know what I mean? But as far as that one right there, I fell asleep. A fire started in my apartment, and when the firemen came and the police, they found what they found out was a portion of cocaine on my kitchen counter, right? Because at those times I was in these streets. And also they found a 45 in my computer tower. So
woo! In the tower. What a spot.
Yeah, I thought I was smart.
Wait, who goes through? Wait, hold on. So let me walk through this. Are you passed out during the fire?
I was completely passed out. I've told this story so many times, but I'll give you the elevator version. They took me out of the apartment, took me to the station, and then went back with a search warrant. When they took me out of the apartment, the only time I woke up is when I was actually like in my landlady's office, and I didn't even realize that a fire happened in my apartment, dude. That was how drunk I was.
Okay, damn. See, in my mind, the way you explained it at first, I was like, wait a minute. You're on the floor passed out, and their first instinct was like, okay, I understand if they catch the cocaine.
No, I was in bed.
Oh, all right.
I slept through the fire.
But if it's like, okay, we see the coke, and then it's like the second officer's thought is, what's in the computer tower? Like, that's how I was picturing it.
No. Because they seen the coke, they're like, okay, we saved you. You're alive. But, coke.
Like some going on in here. Yeah,
and it wasn't like they found like a couple of baggies there. I'm talking about like they found like an ounce on the table, like an open Ziploc ounce. I was like, they went back with the search warrant, and the rest was history. But with that happening, it made my brain turn a corner when like I got that finality that like, oh my God, I'm not going to be coming home after a week or whatever. Like, I'm out of here. Right. And that started my sobriety. I started going to meetings while I was inside, continue my meetings when I came home, stopped going to meetings for years, but my brain just, I don't have the desire. Like I MC at clubs and do all different types of things, and I don't have the desire to drink. So it's not like I'm trying to not drink. I just, it's not there anymore.
Because that's the thing. And that's what I think a lot of people, especially in this industry, find difficult to quit, because in the entertainment industry, like half of this shit survives on drugs and alcohol.
Yeah.
And there's always a party, or there's always an event. There's always an excuse to do the vice.
Riders.
So coke is out of my life, but I drink probably way too much. As my mom, I drink far too much, but I drink a fair amount. Dabble with shrooms here and there, you know, I'm kind of trying to leaning in on more of those drugs, but, but drinking, I think that's my next frontier, not to go cold turkey, but just to be, not to always say yes, is kind of like where I'm at. And with me again, it just starts with saying it out loud and just like catching myself and just like reminding myself, like, you don't need this glass of wine to be here. Like you can just do the thing, go to the event and then just go home. Like it's cool. You're there. Like that's the thing, is for you to be there. The wine doesn't make this experience any better, worse, whatever. Like you don't have to do this. So I'm trying to, if I try to talk it through in my mind, like as logical as possible, that kind of is what sticks with me. And like, you know, I'm trying to, you know, stick to my gym routine in the morning. And it's like, okay, well, if you have these drinks, then you're fucking up your routine. You're either going to sleep in, or just go to the gym and have the worst workout around. So, you know, just kind of, just continuously, you know, reminding myself of the consequences, I guess.
Well, you know, it's all about what you deem a problem or not. And also when it comes to the drinking, I'll tell you one thing. One of the issues that I had at first was like, and this is when I was still single, so don't worry, shorty, right? am I still going to be able to pick up chicks, right? Am I still going to have that personality? And guess what? I still bagged a lot of chicks in my sobriety while I was still out here. You know what I'm saying? So it ain't nothing. You know what I mean? It'll be weird when they're like, I'm drinking, but you're not. But guess what? Go ahead, drink. Have as much drinks as you want. And then you remember the next date.
Yeah.
And in motion, you could, it's like now you're in the matrix, because now you can, like, I don't know, like measure all your moves when we're talking about the other stuff. Dude,
it's this weird thing. Like, I feel like I have so many of these conversations with my friends about like how dating now has become so analytical and like and on autopilot. So, you know, it's like I can hit the same spot and get the same order, have the same conversation, do the same sing and dance and get the exact end result that I want. It's like, it's so easy in that regard. Like, I feel like I have to reevaluate my relationship with so many things, like women, alcohol being the main two probably. But yeah, it's just this world lends itself to overconsumption in every regard. And I think it's important to at least humble yourself or find someone that you're comfortable talking to about these things.
Yeah.
And for, it's funny, 'cause like for most people, that's not their friends or family, and they find comfort in the random person that they, you know, met online or whatever. So whoever that is, find them and hit them. 'Cause you know, you don't want to fuck up and, you know, make a mistake that you can't undo.
Facts or therapy. You know what I'm saying?
That too. I mean, the short answer is find a therapist. Yeah. My last therapist was a pussy and I couldn't get along with him. So I'm on the hunt for a new one. But for the therapy, I think is probably the best option.
Yeah, it's, you know, I have my thoughts on therapy. I like and I don't like, but that's a whole other pod. Let me ask you quick fast. Why do you hate Eminem?
Oh my God. Dude, do I really want to go through? There's like, I feel like we know why he gets the love that he gets. He was the white savior that pierced an all black art form that was easy to prop up and easy to champion because every white kid in Michigan and middle America saw themselves in him.
Mm-hmm.
But, and then like the thing I love about M is the time just does him dirtier. Like the longer time goes on, the worse his life. Like his lyrics aged horribly. He had a legit 20-year span of just putting out hot garbage. Every time he comes out now, it's awful. Like I don't even have to do anything. Just listen to what he's putting out.
Yeah, it's not.
I'm not a hater. Listen to what he's putting out. It's awful. Like if I'm a hater, then you have a shitty taste in music.
Yeah.
Like, and people are like, what about the early? Cool. The albums he put out 30 years ago are okay. Fine. Take it. So, okay. What about the last 30 years?
Yeah. You know what? Like, he coined the term stan, but a lot of stanism has happened because of that, right? Like,
oh, for sure. Yeah. And that, and people say, like, you hit. Me hating his music does not mean that I ignore his legacy and his impact on the genre or the art form. I get it. I understand his role. And it obviously is extremely important.
Mm.
But I think it's insulting to put him in those conversations with lyricists. Listen to, I mean, look, if we're comparing him one of the GOATs, if he's top five, look at, you know, Reasonable Doubt, the lyrics, the depth, the vulnerability, the beats, just that. Music 96.
Yeah,
listen to the Slim Shady LP. Was that 99? Same era. What would you listen to now? It's not even close. Like, why are we, I don't get the conversation. People are like, he gets that because of what he looks like. He's not great. As a lyricist, he's awful.
Yeah. Well, listen, I won't say awful, but I will say this with it, when to cap this Eminem segment off here quick, fast, like it's the hip hop listeners. If you put Reasonable Doubt and the Slim Shady LP in front of them, the general hip hop person is going to say, give me the Reasonable Doubt. But the Eminem fan is going to always take the Slim Shady.
Yeah. And yeah, my thing, like he's saying a lot of shit. Like he says a lot of words, but it's not good.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, cool. You have a very tight grasp on the English language. Sick.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, listen, salute to M. We're a hip hop podcast. Maybe one day I'll try to get an M interview, but probably not.
Yeah, a lot of people.
Probably not. Last time that I seen you actually in person is when you did the show over here in Toronto. Okay. I went out to the Danforth Hall to see the
hell yeah, that was a great show.
Yeah, that it was dope. Dude, you know, proposed without a ring on stage. It was amazing. Right,
not a ring. He followed up and said, hey,
you got one?
He said, here's the ring, I did it. And I was like, I'm proud of you, man. You doubled back and you followed through. So yeah, I hope they're still together. I would imagine they're still together. He was madly in love with her.
Salute to you, homie. That's the sign for Rexdale. You know what I'm saying? Salute to you. You know what I'm saying? Now with the shows and stuff like that, like how putting one of those shows together, can you just give me like some of the logistics to putting something like that together?
Yeah, sure. So yeah, a lot of the shows. So since you were there, you know, you have some, but I'll try to provide as much context for those who aren't familiar. It's not a sit down and watch podcast. It's, it's very interactive. We have a projector that is a very integral part of the show itself. We run segments. So like you saw, like the Jeopardy,
yep,
we call it, where, you know, we have different categories that pertain to the show. And then each answer is like, you know, a joke or reveal something, whether it be a words or a video link or something like that. We've done, speed dating. That was a segment we did for a while. We invite couples on stage and go through their phones, yep, you know, pretty successfully break couples up. You know, it's very much a call and response rather than us talking and the consumer just listening. In terms of how those happen, how it's come about, a lot of that stuff, Rory and I meet up and we'll write these segments, these jokes, and just kind of come up with these things together. And then once we have conceptually what we want to create, we'll bring in Peach, who obviously does the designs and creates everything that is you see on the projector. Mm-hmm. Peach will make it come to life. And then once we see it on the laptop, it's easier for me because visually I'm like, okay, well, how would this translate to the crowd? So then we kind of like nitpick, tweak things and kind of reword things to make things fit each show. And each show is different. The segments may be the same, but we cater, like, you know, like you saw in Toronto, if she's more likely from Scarsborough to do this, yeah, like we'll cater it to the city in which we're in, which is fun. But yeah, like generally we have this structure. It's funny because like this year in cities, we have a show on DC on the 23rd. Mm-hmm. But any other city that, you know, say we repeat, we'd have to do a, that's the thing, we have to create
a new show,
whole new show. So coming up with, you know, those new game show segments, I kind of like to look at what game shows are popular and how can we convert them to fit what we're trying to do on our live show. So it's a lot of planning, but it's creatively challenging, but it's fun. And it's one of those things. It's like, you know, when a comedian works a new joke, you have to test it in front of a crowd.
Yeah.
When we work a new segment, there's no practice run. It's like, all right, like here, we spent days working on this and we hope it works.
Hope people laugh. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, and you know, so sometimes it's not always a home run. I think I forgot where we were. Were we in London and we did one of those segments and we were like the show this, and they didn't have that show.
Their teleprompter wasn't working.
Well, that too. That's forget about it. We got to wing the whole show. Yeah. But even last year, this past year, the show was great. But there was one segment where I think it was like we did a segment about, you know, the show Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. Mm-hmm. They didn't know what that was at all. So we had this like segment and the guys came out and they were like, we don't know this show or this game. So we kind of like dropped the act of the segment, but still carried through with the game because the joke still hit because they pertain to the pod and like it made sense for the show. But yeah. That was one of those things where we had to intake. We're like, oh shit. Like they don't even know who like Regis Philbin is. Like yeah. We had like so many gaps here that we didn't even think about. So shit like that. You just learn. It's all the learning experience.
It's data for the next one, right?
It, exactly. So I'd love to go in there next time with a flip on a London show and just like hit them over the head with something that they like grew up watching and they'd be like, oh shit, they know about that.
Yeah. So, yeah. And you know, even from watching that show last time, like when I was over here, you had a Peach, everybody was there with you. But now there's minus one person that was there with you, Eden.
Yeah.
I've listened to the pod. There's listeners of the pod, right? What happened over there, bro? What happened with that whole thing, man?
If you saw my conversation with Danny, that with respect to that situation and everyone involved, we agreed after a meeting to not talk about it excessively. So with that, I'll just say, you know, after the situation, you know, Rory and Maul are running a company and they had to make a difficult decision. And you know, that was the result that came with it. But obviously it's an unfortunate situation and no one wanted what happened to happen on the like initial front, like the actual event that night. It sucks. Like, but you know,
well, let me ask you.
Yeah.
Because as a listener, I started like once that was all done and, you know, behind y'all, right? I started hearing like a little bit of differences, but you guys are back to normal pretty much. Can you give me some of like the difficulties like once you start like you lose one piece of the team and you keep the ship running? Like what does that look like? Because you know what I'm talking about. Like there was a couple of things missing. The first audio back, it was a little bit lower. So I was like, I had to like turn it up. The, you know, some of the segments didn't have some of the same things. So like, I've dealt with this before too, right? Where like, I have to like learn the different things that person was doing in my company and then like mimic them or do something different or better. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, of course. So I can definitely speak on that. So obviously, you know, when he left, what left with him were all of his presets and all the things that he used to pod. So
presets.
We bring in Rel, who's extremely talented and great at what he does, but you know, there's not much time for a learning curve in this industry.
No, you gotta put out an episode next week.
We gotta put shit out. Yo, welcome to the studio on Wednesday. We're shooting tomorrow.
Yeah, and we're turning it around in 24 hours because you guys filmed the day before and then put it out the day after.
Yep. Exactly. Not only that. Yeah. It's obviously the output's a lot, but it's a tight turnaround.
Yes.
So, we were prepared to, you know, obviously there's going to be hiccups along the way, and to get it right, you have to have conversations, and Rel's smart guy. And receptive to learning, and he wants to get it. Obviously, he's not, you know, he wants it to be right. So, it's because it's his art, it's his work at the end of the day. So, I think we've gotten it right now. But to your point, the audio levels on the first few episodes, and then there was, I think he, you know, may have forgotten we didn't have music or like a pre-roll joke before. Yeah. So it's just like, but that's well, things
you got mail.
Yeah, that too. So I'm not even, it's funny because like that's not even his fault. That's stuff that we were so used to being on autopilot that we never even had to explicitly say out loud that as a listener, I'm listening to, obviously I listen to every episode, but the first episode you do just out of curiosity, and I'm not hearing those things. And I was like, oh shit, like we forgot to tell him about.
Oh yeah.
So it was like that. So I, you know, the next time we're in the studio, yo, by the way, this is our fault, but like, yo, here's the mail drop. Here's the, if the new Roaring Mall drop, that actually we play, he did it at the front of the episode, but he forgot it at the end.
At the end of the episode.
Once we tell him, he's like, oh, bet. Like, thanks. Like, I got it.
Yeah. But
it's like, it's that thing where, and again, when I used to teach in Chicago, like I was an English major and I know how to use, you know, properly use a comma because I've been doing it my whole life. But how do you explain to a room full of fourth and fifth graders how to use a comma? You never actually explicitly had to say it out loud. You just know to do it. So with that, it was like, you know, we know these things because they're institutional in our operation, but we've never explicitly expressed how it's done because someone that's been with us from the beginning was doing it the whole time.
Yeah.
So it was just occasionally we'd catch ourselves like, oh shit, we got to remind him to do this, or not even remind him, tell him, because no one said it.
Nobody never knew.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so yeah. I think now we're in a good space. The episodes sound great. And Rel, again, I mentioned the Boz's My Karma is Beautiful. Rel did the video and editing on those two, and he smoked. Nice. Smoked those. I got the, I mean, by the time this comes out, Boz's will be out, but I have the final edit now on my phone, and it's incredible. So, there's always a learning curve when you try someone new or bring someone new into an operation, but you know, he's capable and super talented. So
yeah, man. Salute to Rel, man.
Yeah. Great guy.
Last couple of questions I have for you here, right? Just on a more broader tip, just in this, you know, on the podcast and the business of it, how it's been moving. You think that the podcast game has hit its ceiling?
It's funny, man. Cause like I'm a podcast junkie. At least I've become one.
Yeah.
I feel like when people say that, that mainly pertains to like hip hop podcasting.
Okay.
Because I'm seeing and I'm listening to comedians that I really like and a couple other guys that are in a similar podcast space as us that are succeeding and growing and selling out huge venues and like really taking off. But they're not in the hip hop sphere, like the black podcast space. They're just podcasting. So I'm seeing success in a right. So when people say money's drying up in podcasting or like the end of podcasting, I'm sure there's a case to be made if like in this genre that seems to be the trend, but that's not like an apply all to the whole space, at least from what I'm seeing myself. So I don't know. I think it depends. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, listen, man, I agree, right? I feel like a lot of podcasts that started in the pandemic, and the ones who were like into podcasting pre-pandemic will stand the test of time, right? Because, you know, it became a cool thing. It became a trending word even during the pandemic. Guys were using Instagram lives and saying, this is my podcast with no audio. Like, that's not a podcast, dude. There's no audio, right?
Yeah.
So that's kind of... We're starting to see a lot of those people just will that, you know, trickle down and like the cream will rise to the top, basically.
Yeah. And I think that's always the case in any creative, you know, venture. Like, keep swinging, put out as many episodes, podcasts as you want. Like, I think, you know, in podcast kind of leveled the playing field in terms of like barrier of entry. Cause like, I don't know how to play a musical instrument. None of us on our show do, but you don't need that technical skill to be a podcaster. I think the skills of podcasting are there's skill in it, but it's very different than being a musician. But yeah, I mean, pre-pandemic, obviously, but I know some pods that have popped and are doing very well post-pandemic. Like, I think there's still money, and you know, as long as ads are going to be sold against it, that's really what carries all these shows.
And be good. Just be good.
Yeah.
Don't put out trash pods.
Yeah, that part. Like, have good video, have good audio. I mean, just cover the basics. You know, just the things that people often overlook. People are like, oh, I'm funny, I got it. But it's like, yeah, but like, if the audio sucks and your video's like, what are we talking about here? Like, unless if you want someone that's never come in contact with your content to look at it and be like, oh, this seems like a professional operation.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Listen, Julian, I really appreciate you having this combo here with me, bro. Like, I feel like we got to learn a lot about you. And when people go back for this, and I feel like I already know my audience, right? So the Rory and Maul listeners that are over here in Toronto, as well as the people who listen to us other places, will be tapping in. And then when they listen to you guys later on, I feel like this will give a little bit more insight to the person that they're listening to or watching on the YouTube.
Yeah, I hope so. I know my persona on the pod is very like punch up a joke or like be abrasive and an asshole, but
you got dark humor.
Yeah, you know, extremely. But there's a lot more to me. So this is fun. I don't have much to plug, but I'm my Instagram Julian_Nicholas. Where I post a lot of BTS stuff and just, you know, stuff about the actual pod itself. And then I started this channel a couple of days ago on Instagram called Invisible Lens. It's INVSBLELENS. And this is fun because it's film camera that I have. And what I'll do is I'll post like nice film shots here. And then I do very long captions about, you know, I'm a writer at heart. So I do very detailed captions about the scene itself, what we were doing there and what, you know, the people in the photos mean to me and, you know, what the moment was explicitly. So it's very fun, creative outlet. Just, you know, flexing my creativeness as often as I can. So.
Listen, fam, I got to tell you in closing, like there's a couple of things that have inspired me about, you know, listening to the Rory and Maul podcast and just hearing how you guys do it. And, you know, just, I don't want to say ops, but like, I listen to Joe Button podcast all the time too. You know what I'm saying?
But like, yeah, of course. I would imagine a lot of people that listen to our show also listen to that show. I think it's weird that, like what I said earlier about the whole drug thing, like it's weird to pretend like that part of your life didn't happen. Like these two things can coexist.
No, and I'm not a pick sides guy. Like I like podcast, man. So if there's more podcasts now, it's like, okay, more for me. You know what I'm saying?
Great.
But one thing that inspired me is like, I used to do once a week. Like I said, we're pre-recording this interview for like a couple of weeks from now, but I also do a weekly turn it around in one day podcast when I hook up with my co-host and we just chop it up about topics for the week. That was inspired by seeing when the new Rory and Maul podcast started that you guys started doing twice a week. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Right? So we do twice a week. Also, the live shows, we used to just do a sit-down live show and just try to reproduce our podcast. But when I went to you guys' show and I seen the way that you guys were walking around the stage, rarely sitting on the couch,
yeah,
I had to rethink my whole game plan, dude. So the next live show that we did, we literally walked around the whole time. And that's what that we're doing moving forward. I don't even care. I'm not even hiding it. We took it from you guys, bro. I don't give a shit. Dude,
that's amazing. Because, I mean, that's, you know, because the live podcast is still such a new thing.
Yeah.
So it's such a new space. There's no, like, perfect way to execute it. So when we did the show run, not last year, but the year before, and we did this idea of finding local openers for each show, it was cool to give them a stage, but it was also interesting for us to watch how other people use the set. And most people, again, that 99%, I think maybe one of the pods that opened for us had done a live show before, but every other city, it was their first time. I think all but one or two pods would just all sit on the couch and talk at the crowd and like just interact amongst themselves and not engage with the crowd. So the fact that you're saying, like, just from watching us, you were able to, you're in the space to now think completely different about your shows, that makes me want to be like, when we're in Toronto again, hopefully this year, if not whenever, and we do another thing where it's like, we need an opener, like, knowing that that's how you're already thinking, we'd love to have you come on and be a part of that.
So low key, I'm not even going to lie because I'm super transparent with my audience. And salute to Relentless Diaries, I think you had up there and those are all my homies. Marlon Palmer, who was doing the hosting, excellent choice. Okay,
I love those guys.
But we're pretty much the biggest I don't want to toot my own horn, but we're pretty much the biggest hip hop podcast in the city. It's crazy because we don't have a lot of podcasts, so I'm not gonna toot my own horn too much.
Nah, get your shit up.
But we've been out here for like 7 years. I've interviewed pretty much every Toronto rapper out here, bro.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? From like some of the biggest artists to some of the, you know, the most up and coming artists. You know what I'm saying? Like we out here, dog. You asked about We Love Hip Hop in Toronto. They're like, oh yeah, those guys, the guys who be smoking and doing their thing there. Yeah, them guys. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, dude, I had a blast in Toronto. Shout out, you know, Toku and Mucho.
Mm-hmm.
Dude,
Mucho's been on my show.
Yeah, those guys hooked it up when we were out. I love those guys. We're at Apartment 200 every night, man. I love partying out there, man. What a fun, ethnically diverse city.
Listen,
just really pretty people out there.
Yeah. And you're welcome back anytime, brother.
Yeah, thank you, man. I need more homies out there. I fucking love Toronto.
Yeah, man. Next time that you come down, we got to do this in person. We got all the history stuff out the way, so we could just chop it up about whatever's going on in the scene and then that out like the next day. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that was just pod.
Yeah, exactly.
Now I get my shit off.
Exactly. But listen, Julian, thank you for having to sit down with me here. You know what I'm saying? We got another one in the vault right here, fam.
Yeah, man. I'm excited to see this when it comes out. But I really appreciate you, man. Thanks for reaching out, man. This is fun. Like, and again, when I'm in your city, I'll reach out. When you're here, please hit my line.
Will do, brother.
All right, man.
You have a good day, a good rest of your day, brother.
You as well. Salute.
Salute.
We love hip hop.